Hello and welcome to the Monday edition of Football and Grits. It's Monday, December 21st, and that means that I'm your host, David Ubben, joined as always by my co-host, Andy Staples, one of the Athletic's national college football writers. Andy, the playoff is set. The SEC, just one team in this year. Do you have one reason to believe why Alabama will not beat Notre Dame by 30 points?
I think they might not beat them by 30 points.
40?
I think they're going to beat them.
Yeah. Is there a road for Notre Dame to hang?
You know, Alabama's defense is not infallible.
Yes. We learned that for sure.
That's the thing. I mean, one of my bigger takeaways from the SEC championship game is I kind of worry about Alabama's defense against a Clemson-type team because they do offensively have the kind of weapons that Florida has, and then, you know, their defense is considerably better than Florida's defense. So I would worry if they wound up playing Clemson in a national title game. I think that would be more competitive probably than people realize. But for with the Notre Dame thing, I think Notre Dame can play the type of game that will keep it manageable, but not – I just don't see how they could be explosive enough to hang with Alabama.
Yeah, I think Alabama is going to score 50. It's just a matter of how much can you score on Alabama. It depends on how close you can hang. And maybe if you can run the ball a little bit, you can slow them down a little bit, keep them off the field.
Well, see, both teams may run the ball a decent amount, and it just takes some possessions out of the game and keeps the score down a little bit. But that doesn't mean I don't think Alabama's going to win comfortably.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of the Tide going into the playoff? Yet again, it seems like we're on a crash course for Alabama-Clemson chapter 15, it feels like. But what do you make of the Tide's sort of matchup and road here?
I think it's good. I mean, they had the easier road. If you got to play Notre Dame first or Ohio State first, I take Notre Dame. Because the thing about Ohio State is if they're full strength and they're motivated, which obviously they are, you're getting a very good opponent. And I don't know who's going to win Ohio State-Clemson. I mean, I covered that game last year, and it you play that game 10 times, it's going to be five of one and five of the other. So I think that's going to be a fun game to watch. I think Trevor Lawrence is probably the better quarterback of Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields, even though they're probably both going really high in the NFL draft next year. But, you know, Ohio State, when they have everybody, and when's the last time we saw a full-strength Ohio State, or have we seen full strength Ohio State yet? I think that's the bigger question. So that game certainly feels a lot more interesting. But look, you know, Alabama Clemson, we've seen it so many times, but the last time we saw Alabama against Clemson, Clemson destroyed them. We haven't seen Alabama play against Trevor Lawrence again. I kind of want to see that.
I do too.
I want to see this Alabama team get a chance to avenge that game. I know it was 2 years ago, but there's still a lot of the players who were on the team then, and Clemson's got a lot of the same players. So I would like to see if Alabama can hang and or beat Clemson. Because remember, the last time the guys who were on this team played Clemson, it was ugly. They got killed.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, all of the hand-wringing over who got into the playoff I think is fair. I probably would have liked to have seen somebody who has not lost a game by three touchdowns in that number four spot. I probably would have voted Cincinnati if it was up to me. But ultimately, we're going to get at least two games when you see Clemson and Ohio State and you see the winner of that game play Alabama. These teams are playing a different sport, and watching them on the same field is incredible every time we get to see it, and we don't get to see that very often. You know, Clemson Notre Dame is pretty close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can tell when you've got those two types of teams playing one another.
Yes. It's just, you can't help but watch it and just say to yourself, these boys are hitting.
Yes.
Different speed, yeah, different skill.
It seems
it's just
like they're hitting each other harder.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's sort of the upside with the can we call the committee safely elitist at this point, Andy?
Well, yeah, I mean, look, let's be honest. Gary Barta basically said it.
Yeah.
He said there was nothing that was blocking Cincinnati. Well, except that you will not consider them at all. I mean, that's if they just say it like that, it would be more honest.
Behind it's a three-loss Florida team.
It's not that blocking Cincinnati. It's that they never even considered Cincinnati.
Yes. So the upside of that is I think we're going to get some of those games. And we'll see how that goes. I'm excited for it. We did get a mini version of that game in the SEC championship game. Florida, Alabama. Florida put a bigger scare. It seemed like Alabama was getting ready to run away from them. Florida charged back. I kind of thought this was what the game we were going to get, where they just didn't quite have enough bullets in the chamber, and that's kind of where we ended up. But still a great game, and we talked about this last week. Alabama's defense looked like it had been, I guess we could say the word fixed, but also they hadn't played any really elite offenses. They did
in
Florida. I think that's
more accurate.
Yeah, it seems like that's the case now. Early on, you were kind of wondering in that game, but Florida charged there. And like you said, I think you know Alabama at this point looks a little bit more vulnerable. But that was a revealing game. Alabama got pushed. It's always fun to see Alabama have to push themselves. We don't get to see that very often, and we saw that. And when they have to really go and mash the pedal to the floor, they are a fun, fun team to watch.
So it's about 8 o'clock Sunday night as we're recording this. Have until 5 p.m. Eastern time on Monday to put in the Heisman ballot. I still don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
That game made me even more confused. I was already confused going in. That game made it even harder to figure out how to put these guys in order. And, you know, it's just Alabama, an embarrassment of riches on that offense. It's unbelievable. Now, Landon Dickerson going out, losing your center before the college football playoff, do not discount that. That's something that could be a big deal. But Alabama is pretty deep on that offensive line. So if it has to happen, that's a team that can probably absorb that loss. But that's still pretty significant.
Mm-hmm. I did put in my Heisman ballot. Perhaps it's the grits in my bloodstream. But all three of the guys on my ballot participated in the SEC championship game this weekend. That's all I will say. but I think, you know, again, it's this brand of Alabama football. We've talked about it, but when we saw them push the pedal to the metal in the earlier Saban years, it just pound it down your throat and then just you suffocate you on defense. And that, you know, it was a sight to see when just teams just could not find anything against their defense, but not as fun when Alabama mashing the pedal means shooting for 60 points, it's a lot more fun when Devontae Smith is just catching like 85 balls. And that I love watching this Alabama team when they really have to go. And they did. So credit to Florida for pushing them. Alabama, you know, they showed why they're the best team in college football this year. And now they got to prove it on the field. So, well, Andy, the carousel is spinning. It has possibly going to pick up speed. There is one job filled, Clark Lee. By the way, the first name, I believe, out of your mouth on our very first Vanderbilt Vanderbilt
yes,
is open
pile. We were about to wrap the show, and we got the email. I'm like, we should probably talk about this.
I believe Clark Lee was the first name out of your mouth, so I will let you do a victory lap on that in time. What is the path to a lengthy, fruitful stay for Clark Lee?
So
Nashville.
It depends on what Clark Lee wants out of that experience. And I know behind the scenes he's told people he would like to be before he got the job, I think he's actually said it publicly now, but he'd like to do for Vanderbilt what Pat Fitzgerald has done for his alma mater, Northwestern. And kind of the same thing, former player, truly loves the place, grew up in the town. I mean, I understand where he's coming from, why they believed it, because when you talk to him, you believe it too. You know, he really loves that place. And, you know, I like the idea that he wants to be a long-term guy there. You know, it's hard to win there. But I think he understands what they have to do to be successful. I think, you know, he's been there when they weren't as successful. He's seen what James Franklin did, kind of probably understands how some of that worked. And, you know, I think you have to define success accurately for Vanderbilt. And I don't think Vanderbilt's administration is going to have unrealistic expectations. I think They don't think this coach needs to come in and win the East. You know, they think if you can win 7 or 8 games in a few years and then go 6-6 the other years, they're going to be really happy with you. Mm-hmm. And that's the key. I mean, so for Vandy, you know, Derek Mason couldn't get that done. They just kept getting worse the last couple of years. But for the first few years, they were kind of right there. And they needed to find a way to win like 1 or 2 more games a year. And so that's where Clark Lea comes in. Can he win that 1 or 2 more games a year?
Is it oversimplistic to say that the number one thing you got to do is have a Kyle Shurmur on your roster? If you've got a quarterback, you got a fighting chance to do some things. And I think that, I feel like, has to be hire a good OC and have him somebody that can identify, evaluate, recruit, and develop quarterback talent. And that is going to cover up so many of your warts. Because Kyle Shurmur,
I think you should also be different. I don't think you have to run the triple option, but I think you have to have a very definitive offensive identity that makes you different. And if you're lucky, if you're doing it right, maybe also changes the math on your recruiting. Where like the triple option, a lot of why teams run the triple option is they can't get the kind of linemen that they need to compete. So they run the triple option so you can sign linemen who are 30 to 40 pounds lighter than the ones that the other schools are signing. So if you can change the math on the talent pool, that helps you too, because that helps you get those tweeners who are good athletes but maybe don't fit the right archetype to play for one of the bigger name SEC schools. So yeah, you don't have to run the triple, but you have to run something unique. And you know, look at what Coastal Carolina does. Coastal Carolina is an option-based offense, but they throw the ball plenty. That's the kind of offense that Vandy needs to run. And it doesn't have to be that one either. It just needs to be something that is unique, that's not something you see everywhere else. Obviously, you know, even you got the air raid and then the Kiffinized air raid in the SEC. We'll see what winds up running at Auburn, who gets hired at Auburn and what they run. But, you know, there's a lot of that going around. It needs to be something different than that. So Clark Lea will be, you know, watching to see what you wind up deciding in terms of your staff.
Yeah. What, you know, South Carolina's full, but Auburn, currently the only vacancy. Tennessee, walking that tightrope at the moment. At Auburn, where do you see this shaking out? Or if you're in their seat, if you're in Allen Green's seat, what are you doing?
I don't know what Auburn's doing. I mean, I think the timing of this suggests that they're casting a fairly wide net, because they were waiting to see and talk to some people who were coaching on Saturday. Otherwise, they would have already done this. I mean, you know, if it was going to be Hugh Freeze, they'd have already done it. Mm-hmm. If it was going to be Kevin Steele, I think they would have already done it. You know, maybe perhaps they want to talk to some people and compare them against Kevin Steele, but you could have hired him at any point between last week and now. And the longer they go without doing that, the more it suggests it's somebody else. Yeah. But I just don't know exactly, because the names you've seen, Steve Sarkisian, I mean, that makes sense. He's done a lot of good things at Alabama. That offense is humming. And you run, you know, and the thing is, he doesn't have, like, there's no Sark offense. He just sort of works around the talent he has. Put that kind of talent at Auburn, and remember, Auburn already has pretty good talent. And you've got a really, really scary offense, probably. So that's an interesting one. You know, Tony Elliott, we've heard his name come up. We've heard Brent Venables' name come up. That's one of those, you kind of believe it when you see it, when one of those guys actually leaves Clemson. So, I'm curious to see, you know, if anybody else gets in the mix. Billy Napier at Louisiana, I think, has done a really good job. Seems to be in line for an SEC-type job. But is it going to be Auburn? That's a big, big job.
Elsewhere across the SEC, we still have Tennessee, which is sort of figuring out what it's going to do. Jeremy Pruitt said Saturday that he absolutely believes that he will be back in 2021, or at least deserves to be. Nothing super definitive, but
there was the report as the game started against Texas A&M by Trey Wallace about an investigation into, you know, accusations of improper benefits. And
yes,
you know, I hate to say it and be cynical, but the timing on that seems awfully convenient when you might want to fire a head coach who could be very expensive to fire and fire him for free.
Yes, that is sort of the undercurrent of an internal investigation. And also, maybe not for free, but maybe you have some things and you say, hey, how about we lower this buyout and let's cut
this $12.5 million in half, or maybe by a third, and maybe, you know, we spread it out a little longer.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like the NCAA is involved yet, or if Tennessee has passed along anything. That's sort of unclear at the moment. But it's a complicated situation. Sunday night, Phil Fulmer in Tennessee's release announcing its bowl berth says, it's a tremendous development opportunity for our team and, key phrase, should serve as a primer to spring practice for Coach Pruitt and our returners. Traditionally, April, not a time for a coaching change. If you're in...
That is less vague than Chris Del Conte's release about Tom Herman.
It is. And this was not a standalone release, it should be noted. This was in a bowl release, not a standalone vote of confidence. If you're Tennessee, what are you doing right now, Andy?
It just depends on what they want. I mean, again,
they want to win. They want to win, and they're not doing it.
I'm being completely cynical about this, but if you launch an internal investigation when you want to fire the guy who's a really high buyout, I think I have a pretty good idea what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My question on that is, if you're a coach that Tennessee approaches, does that spook you?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I think I would. I think I would say, except, hey, this doesn't seem like something that I'm super fired up
I think
up
there's
about.
A guy out there who really wants the Tennessee job. Who
yes.
has been involved with some investigations before.
It's getting cold in here. It's getting cold in here, Andy.
Is there a freeze warning?
Is there a freeze warning that is happening quickly? The thing that I think is the problem with that is, if you're Tennessee and you're going to have this investigation, and if you do make a move and you sort of cite some of these things, and then you say, well, you turn around and you say, oh, here's our new coach, Hugh Freeze. I'm not going to rule that out because this is not my first time knowing what college football is. But that is...
And also, this is the University of Tennessee.
Yes. But that is a lot of
behind-the-scenes cloak-and-dagger intrigue at all times.
This is true. That is next-level sort of... we'll call it cognitive dissonance, I suppose, is the correct term.
Galaxy brain. Now, if you do that, your introductory press conference has to be similar to the one when Louisville rehired Bobby Petrino. And it was basically, yeah, we know what he did last time, but he also won, so here he is.
And he's a changed man, Andy.
Except they didn't. But they didn't play that up. They said it a few times, and then they just sort of gave up on it.
But I think it's, you know, this will be very interesting. I think if Tennessee is going to make a move, I think you'd want to know what you're moving toward. I think that's key. I think if you're Tennessee, this job is better right now than it was in 2017. But I don't think you want to be throwing yourself out there into the throes of the carousel. I think you know what
you're moving toward if you open it, because you have the choice to open it or not.
That's true.
And then the guy who would take it will win there. Like, that's the thing. I got into it with all the Auburn and Tennessee folks this week, and the Tennessee folks got all mad at me because I said Auburn's a better job than Tennessee, and it is. But if Tennessee were to replace Jeremy Pruitt with Hugh Freeze, and we don't know what Auburn's going to do yet, but Hugh Freeze can win at Tennessee.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that right now. 100% Hugh Freeze can win at Tennessee. Tennessee's a better job than Ole Miss, and Hugh Freeze won there.
Here's my question. I get the Hugh Freeze attraction. I do. I don't know
because
that he would be...
he wins?
Yes, I don't know that he'd be number one on my list. The name that is catching some ground in Tennessee, a man who recently had some more time on his hands. If you're Tennessee and you pick between Hugh Freeze and if say, Gus Malzahn wants this job, what do you do?
Hugh Freeze.
Why?
He drives Nick Saban crazy.
Well, so does Gus Malzahn. It's been 13 months.
I realize
months since
Gus
Malzahn
does too, but Hugh Freeze. When has Hugh Freeze not had a quarterback? When has Hugh Freeze not had a good quarterback, or a quarterback outperforming what we thought he could previously do? I think here's your prime example is Malik Willis, who was amazing this year at Liberty. guess where Malik Willis played before
that's
Liberty.
Fair. That's pretty good. But I will also say, and granted, part of it is where you were, Ole Miss versus Auburn. But I just think the consistent winning, the winning big, and the beating Nick Saban, and being an elite recruiter, all of those things together.
Spell Hugh Freeze?
I would go Gus over.
Spell
Freeze.
Hugh Freeze?
Gus is many of the same things.
Gus is many of the same things as Hugh Freeze
with less of the baggage. That's what it is.
Who outpunched their weight class more, Hugh Freeze at Ole Miss or Gus Malzahn at Auburn?
Show me the division titles. They had it in their hand, and they coughed it up against Arkansas.
Listen, how many times is Hunter Henry going to complete that lateral? Or I guess he didn't
Don't put yourself in that position. I'm just saying, if you're going to win the West, you can't lose to that
team. Ole Miss.
I know.
It's not Auburn.
Don't lose to Arkansas. I'm just saying.
It's Ole Miss.
I'm just saying, I think you have to have somebody that has been a consistent winner and doesn't have...
Doesn't have the baggage. I get it. You want to say it doesn't have the baggage.
Yes. And all that stuff, you know, again, I think Malzahn offers you a lot of the same upside, a lot of the same consistency, a lot of the same promise, and you don't have to sort
of
hold
your nose. It would definitively answer my debate that I was having with the Tennessee fans this week. Either I would be very wrong or they would be very wrong, because it would tell us which is the better job, because whichever one Gus Malzahn performed better at would be the better job.
It's true. Earmuffs,
it's
Tennessee.
Guy.
Earmuffs, Tennessee fans.
You're actually controlling for all the variables, David.
It's true.
So I would like to see the answer to that.
Earmuffs, Tennessee fans. Andy's right.
the best part was all the Georgia fans who all have to play Auburn and Tennessee, and we're like, yeah, it's Auburn.
Yeah, it is. I think that answer might not have been the same 15 years ago, but it's not 2005, so... You know,
I think it would have been very similar. In 2005, Auburn was coming off a 12-0 season.
Fair point. Mr. Tuberville got some things done there. Senator Tuberville, you're correct. It's going to be interesting to see. I think, you know, Tennessee certainly seems like a change could be coming very soon, but there are no guarantees.
Fulmer thing was very interesting. The part about Tennessee that is always interesting is you never quite know who's making the decision today.
Yes. And who knows what statement is coming from where and all of those things. Right.
Fulmer may very much want Jeremy Pruitt to be the coach in 2021.
I can tell you that's like, pretty much accurate. Everything I've heard all season is
I have zero doubt of that.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, will Philip Fulmer make that decision?
Yep. That's the question. And if he, certainly he has people in his ear, but can he talk them out of it? Can he say, no, we got to go one more year and here's why? I wouldn't put that past him. He has a lot of influence. His name's still Phil Fulmer. He's still got that ring.
The athletic director, he'd be better.
Yes. Well, sure. But it's different when John Curry says it to a 60-year-old, you know, Tennessee fan. It's different when it comes from John Curry versus when it comes from Phil Fulmer. It's not the same. He's a football coach.
We'll see. I mean,
Tennessee born and bred, all those things.
Winchester, Tennessee.
Yes. Got a Letterman jacket to prove it, everything. Bowls, Andy. The SEC, let's just say Birmingham getting things done because not a lot of SEC opt-outs. I don't know if you can call LSU an opt-out. I would like to for entertainment's sake, but for accuracy's sake, we'll call it a self-imposed bowl ban. Vanderbilt at 0-9 graciously sent its season out to pasture. Everyone else, including
South
Carolina.
Come on, go play Army in Shreveport, Vandy.
I want to see it, black and gold. You can trade jerseys, the whole thing. South Carolina, despite going 2-8, switching coaches, still going bowling. Shane Beamer going to be hanging around. Andy, when you look at the SEC's bowl slate, we've got Alabama and Notre Dame, we talked about that, so I'm going to say you can't comment on that. Georgia and Cincinnati, the entirety of the G5's hopes on their shoulder. In the Peach Bowl, the Capital One Orange Bowl, Texas A&M and North Carolina. I just broke my own rule because no one's paying me to say Capital One, and I try not to use the sponsor
names. Yeah, why'd you do that?
I was reading. It's my bad. Cotton Bowl. I am going to omit the sponsor there. Florida and Oklahoma. The Citrus Bowl. VRBO is the home,
It's like Airbnb.
Yeah, it's like the Airbnb knockoff. I was going to say, I thought that was like an oil company or something. Anyway, Citrus Bowl, Auburn and Northwestern. The Music City Bowl.
It'll always be the OurHouse.com Florida Citrus Bowl to me.
Yeah. The Music City Bowl, I don't know what TransPerfect is, but Missouri will face off against, I believe, Iowa. They have Big Ten on here, but I believe that's Iowa, correct?
I believe so, yes.
I think that's right.
That is right. Iowa versus Missouri.
Yes. And then Mississippi State in the Armed Forces Bowl. We need to switch off of this list because they don't have the opponents on here. Mississippi State in the Armed Forces Bowl, I believe that is UAB?
Tulsa. They're playing Tulsa.
Tennessee facing off against West Virginia in the Liberty Bowl. Texas Bowl, Arkansas and TCU. Gator Bowl, Kentucky and, is that NC State?
That is correct.
Look at this. I am just from seeing it today, I'm calling these from memory. And then, of course, Ole Miss and the other offense that I'm forgetting that we want to see.
Indiana.
And then, of course, the Gasparilla Bowl.
It would be
Bowl.
A Michael Penix Jr. homecoming if he were healthy.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But he's not.
South Carolina and UAB in the Gasparilla Bowl. Andy, in that lineup, what is the game that you are the most excited about?
I think there's two. I really like the Oklahoma-Florida matchup. I think that could be a lot of fun. Kyle Pitts not playing for Florida, but two really good offenses. We'll get to see if Oklahoma's defense is really better. Their numbers got a lot better this year than they had been in previous years. I believe they finished number 19 in yards per play allowed when, you know, a couple years ago they were in the hundreds. So how much better have they really gotten? Because that with no Kyle Pitts, it's still going to be a test if you're dealing, and we'll see if Florida has more opt-outs, but if you're dealing with Kadarius Toney, Trevon Grimes, Justin Shorter, Jacob Copeland, and those backs running the wheel route, I don't think that's an easy matchup for Oklahoma. And then Florida's defense, we know, is not perfect either, so you're going to see Spencer Rattler throwing to a bunch of good receivers. I think that's going to be a fun game. The other game that I think is going to be a lot of fun is Ole Miss against Indiana. The Indiana's a pretty good defense. I mean, that's the thing that I wrote about Penix. Obviously, you know, Tennessee fans wanted to hear about Michael Penix, a former commitment there. But if you look at the story of Indiana's season, it's because they really locked down a lot of the teams they played. And Tom Allen's a defensive guy. So he's going back to Tampa, where his career sort of got jump-started as a high school coach. This is going to be a fun game. That Ole Miss offense is, you know, a blast to watch. It's an adventure, a roller coaster every time. Matt Corral has those games where he can't miss, and he has those games where he can't miss the other team. So
seems like he has both every now and then. Saturday we had one of those.
I think Saturday was all the above.
Yes.
So I just think that's going to be a really fun game.
Well, Andy, we got Return of the Mac once when Mac Brown went back to North Carolina. I was in the house the last time the Aggies, currently the angriest fan base in America, went head-to-head with Mac Brown and his secret weapon, Justin Tucker. It did not end well for the Aggies on that night. Controversial flag, bragging rights for going on 9 years now in that rivalry, still residing in Austin. But this is the closest thing to it. And I really do think, you know, I think you're going to see actually a motivated A&M team here. And I like the storylines. But we saw this, you know, in 2014, TCU, they get squeezed out and then just unleash on
destroy Ole Miss.
Who, Andy, can you remind me who the head coach of that team was? I forgot. I don't remember.
That was Hugh Freeze.
Oh, was it?
Can we talk about when he beat Oklahoma State in the Sugar Bowl the next year?
Fair enough. But anyway,
Tennessee would take a Sugar Bowl win. They'd be cool with that, right?
You might be. But I'm always intrigued when you see sort of the team that gets wronged the most by the committee. And I don't know that A&M has, you know, a ton of gripes. They have, I think, you know, most deserving, sure, best. I don't think that's accurate at all. But
I don't know they're most deserving. They didn't beat a team that was in the playoff, and Notre Dame did.
Fair point.
I mean, they could have gone either direction, and the only people who would have been really upset about the decision would be fans of the team that got left out.
Yeah.
Everybody else would be like, okay, you could have picked either one and we wouldn't have cared.
Yeah, pretty much. But I want to see if the Aggies can flex a little bit, because this is an opportunity. They're a better team than North Carolina.
I kind of wish I kind of wish they'd match them against Oklahoma. Yeah. Give them a chance to play a Power 5 champion and flex on a Power 5 champion.
Yeah.
North Carolina's good. I like the idea of this defense getting to play against Sam Howell and those backs.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I would have liked to have seen them play Oklahoma because yeah. Oklahoma won its league. And, you know, that, and also, just get, like, give them a drive. Why is everybody going to fly to Florida?
Yeah. Andy, we've seen this play out a lot of times. We saw it with Auburn and UCF. You see the sort of the Georgia matchup against Cincinnati. Cincinnati, right there with A&M, probably the angriest fan base in America. They've got a lot to prove.
But I don't think this is going to be a Georgia, we're not interested in being in this bowl game.
I don't buy that Auburn was not interested in the UCF game. I don't. The times that we've seen teams lose,
I'm talking about Georgia
yeah.
against Texas. I'm yeah. talking about that game.
Well, either way, so, the times that we've seen the G5 teams show up and show up in a big way, I don't buy the not interested. What is your concern level for
Georgia?
The thing is, Georgia's
going to be interested because of the way they ended the season. They were kind of peaking as the mm-hmm. season ended. They got their senior day ripped away from them. I do think this will be a game where Georgia wants to use this as a springboard to next year. And, you know, so, and since he's going to be highly motivated, that's a well-coached team. They've got some really good players, really good quarterback in Desmond Ridder.
Yeah.
So, and some like NFL guys on defense. So this will be a good game, but I'm excited to see Georgia with a little extended time for JT Daniels as the starting quarterback, not just sort of thrown in game planning. He's had a few weeks now to kind of get settled as the starting quarterback. And you know, this could be kind of a launch point for Georgia.
Could be.
And now
this is a
will we get super
game.
Excited if they run away with this game?
Yes.
Will we get super super excited and overrate them next season?
Yes
we will.
Yes. The takes coming out of this game, I can already see them. If Cincinnati loses by 20, if they win, if Georgia wins by 20, all scenarios.
They crystallize easily.
I'm into it. I'm into this game. So, should be an interesting bowl slate. Listen, we didn't think we were going to get any college football at some point. So, if yep. you were the person complaining about too many bowl games, you got your wish. You're terrible. You got your wish this year. There are fewer bowl games, but there's still some good ones, especially with the SEC. So, relish them. There's not that many left. And hopefully next season is a little more normal and a little bit less joyless. I've enjoyed this season, but it is, it's been weird. It's been weird, Andy. I think we can all...
100%. I'm glad it happened because I think it provided a little bit of normal for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope the players got what they wanted out of it because, you know, most of the players did want to play and
yeah.
pushed hard to play. And, you know, I don't blame anybody for opting out at this point or any teams that are opting out of bowl games. You know, what they've had to do to get on the field has been pretty rough. So I'm glad they did it. And mm-hmm. yeah, I'm excited about a lot of these games. And, you know, I think there's probably a lot of people that who've been coaching and playing through this season that are probably ready for it to end. And that's yeah. okay. You know, you got a season. By spring practice, there's going to be a lot of people vaccinated.
Yeah.
The world's going to look like a very different place. So I'm ready for that.
It's been a weird year. I think I've used the word uncomfortable with this season. I don't think I can say that they shouldn't have played. I've been uncomfortable with a lot of it. But I've enjoyed it. When the games actually start, when the ball gets kicked off, like you said, there's a little bit of normalcy. And
I think
some
the
of
year
some
would
of the
have
power,
been a lot worse with no college football
yeah,
than it was.
Probably not. The power dynamics make me a little uncomfortable. And, you know, the idea that players were safer at home, I don't think, you know, when you see the season play out, I don't think that argument really held much water. But we didn't see a lot of the sort of nightmare scenario, and for that, I am thankful. So that will do it for our Monday show. For Andy Staples, I am David Ubben. If you are not a subscriber to this show, you should change that. Get it delivered directly to your device from whatever your podcast purveyor of choice is. And if you're not a subscriber to The Athletic, change that. You can do that at theathletic.com/grits. Read Andy's work, my work. We'll be covering the coaching carousel, the bowls, the playoff. We've got you covered. We have like 160 college football writers, so you will never be short on content there. So thank you guys for listening. Thank you for reading. Subscribe. If you are subscribed to the show, leave us a rating, a review, all that good stuff. It helps the show. Thank you guys again. We'll see you very soon.